case, Porter versus Erie Foods, Ms. Carr.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is a racial harassment, discrimination, and retaliation claim that we're asking the court to reverse an award of summary judgment that was granted to the defendant at the Northern District in Rockford and Western Division. And there are really two main areas I'd like to use my limited time to discuss with you this morning. And that is, number one, that there is, in fact, ample evidence to show that Mr. Porter was subjected to a hostile work environment, that the events that happened to him did, in fact, rise to that level at Erie Foods, in opposite of what the court held. And secondly, that there is, in fact, also a basis for employer liability in this case.
Well, what bothers me most about your case is I don't know how is an employer supposed to comply with the requirements that you would put on it. What would they have had to do?
Well, I think they would have had to perform a much better investigation, Your Honor.
Well, that's too vague, right?
Well, I can tell you specifically.
We can't say to employers, we have to perform better investigations. What does that mean?
Well, in this particular case, what happened was is that the...
What specifically do you think was their minimum obligation?
Their minimum obligation in this particular case was to do two things. First of all, they needed to talk to the people that were potentially responsible for these incidences.
Well, he had a meeting with them.
He had a meeting with everyone, generally, but he didn't ask individual questions.
Well, that's the question. How much investigation is required? How many workers would he have had to talk to?
The people that he knew were responsible for this act of hanging a noose. He asked Mr. Porter directly, who is responsible for doing this? Who did this? And when Mr. Porter was reluctant to give an answer, Mr. Goffinay, the human resources manager, said to him, well, was it Matheny and Rooney? And my client looked back at him and said, how did you know that? And he said, well, we've had prior behavioral issues with him before. And then Mr. Goffinay proceeded to have individual meetings with the people on the floor, but never even spoke to the people that he now knew were responsible for these acts of race harassment. That's unheard of. If you want to stop harassment and you know who it is that was your tortfeasor, you go to that person and you say, did you do this? You perform an investigation. And if he now had confirmation of the fact that he was correct, that these are the guys that were responsible, at least initially, you would have suspended them pending looking into it a little more, talking to the other people to say, did you see this as well? You would have at least talked to them to find out, did you do this? And that was certainly never done here. These individuals were never disciplined.
The employer says that she, Ms. Santos, told him that Porter had told her that neither Matheny nor Rooney put it there.
And that is the employer's story. We dispute that.
Excuse me?
We dispute that. That is what...
You dispute on what base? On base of what?
That my client did not tell that to Ms. Santos. My client went to Ms. Santos after Ms. Santos saw the noose hanging, open and obvious, of course, in the warehouse and said, just so you know, this was meant for me. Erie Foods says that Ms. Santos went back to Mr. Porter five or six times to ask him, was it Matheny and was it Rooney? We dispute that, and for the court to rely on that in granting summary judgment is making an inappropriate question of fact, a true issue of fact, and of course we dispute that.
Was there any evidence submitted about how Erie responded to white workers' claims of harassment?
No, ma'am, because we aren't aware of that there were any made. We are not aware of any Caucasian employee ever going to Erie saying, hey, I've been harassed or I've been discriminated against. The only case that we are aware of about prior actual harassment being alleged is this particular case here. Erie does not have a employee handbook at all. It has an
aren't employees, of course.
Well, in my particular client's case, he was a temporary employee. But they do, of course, have
permanent employees. Weren't the rest of them temporaries also?
Not all of them, no. No, Erie did have permanent employees.
Pardon?
Erie did have permanent employees.
No, but the people in his part of the facility, weren't they all temps?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe it was Mr. Alvarez that was a temp, and Mr. Rooney and Mr. Matheny, I believe, were Erie employees. But in any event, even if you have temporary workers that are working within your place of business, you still control them. You're the one that tells them, hey, here's our policies, here's what we expect you to do. And that would not negate Erie's duty to protect the workers that are working within its facility. When it had this meeting, it failed to hand out any anti-discrimination policy.
Someone who has temporary workers has exactly the same obligations to educate them about these discrimination problems as someone who has his own employees.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think if you allow temp...
Realistic?
I'm sorry?
Is that realistic?
Yes, Your Honor.
What if you have a temp who goes... He works in one place for a day, and he works at another company for 2 days or something like that?
Well, if you have somebody that's coming in for only 1 day... it's a different fact scenario than we have here.
Temporaries don't have to be treated identically to employees.
I still hold firm to my original answer, Judge. If you allow temporary employees, irregardless of how long they're there, to violate your policies and discriminate and harass your employees...
You just said if he's just there for a day...
Well, I'm saying that's...
If he's going to be there for a day, you can't spend a day... educating him in discrimination problems. You don't get any
and I don't there. Dispute that. That is true. You can't spend a whole
it's
day training.
Irrespective of how long the temp is there.
I don't think that you can have a different rule for temporary employees.
I don't understand you. First you say if he's just there a day, you don't have to provide the same kind of information, education, and so on designed to prevent him from harassing anybody, and then you say it doesn't make any difference whether they're a day or a year.
No, I'm not saying that you don't have the same duty to make sure that they are knowledgeable of your policies. It would have been a simple, even if it's 1 day, it'd be a simple, here's our discrimination policy. It's a one-page document at Erie. That, I think, you'd still have a responsibility to do. Otherwise, you'd have this litany of
one
temporary...
One page enough?
In this particular, well, in one page, sure, one page would be enough if the employees understood what it was that they were not allowed to do. And certainly hanging nooses and taunting someone with nooses, saying that if you tell anybody, I'm going to come and find you, and slamming your fist on a table saying, I wish you would die.
I'm surprised you'd say that handing a new employee a one-page document complies with your requirements of, making sure that you don't allow a... illegal workplace activities.
Judge, I think that it's very common.
Side issues.
It's very common in businesses that
you. That's all they do?
No, not in all businesses, but some. Not every business, in order to comply with Title VII, do you have to have full day of training on anti-harassment. But what you do have to do, if you have a harassment situation come up, you better address the issue, and you better make sure your employees understand that policy and you stand behind it, and you issue discipline where the clear designation of your policies have been violated. And that absolutely wasn't done here. And, as this court said in the Dunn case that you all decided just 3 years ago, employers have an absolute arsenal of weapons that it can use to try to divert harassment issues. And when you fail to do that, when the employer fails to do that, that is what leads to liability. And here, even though there was knowledge of what was going on, there was absolutely nothing that was taken on by Erie to stop this behavior. And then what happens is it escalates into all the other things we talk about factually. My client's terrified. He leaves and he calls the police on his way home one day to make sure someone knows what's happening to him in case something happens to him at this plant, and it leads to his constructive discharge. I see I'm out of time. If there's no questions, I'll...
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Carr.
Sure.
Mr. Feeweger?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Erie Foods runs a food processing plant in Rochelle, Illinois, and the plaintiff, an African-American, was placed there as a temporary worker by Burton Placement Services on July 19, 2004. 1 month later, he quit without notice or cause. There are several events that are the subject matter of this discrimination claim. I'd like to make it clear first that when Ms. Santos, his night supervisor, found the noose above the H-line filler location, she immediately had Mr. Matheny remove that noose from that location. Mr. Matheny, in questioning by her at that time, said, "No, I didn't put that noose there." He testified that to that very same fact in his deposition.
Yes, but what Ms. Carr says is that Porter said to Goffinette, or said something in effect, "How did you know?" indicating that Porter believed and was saying in effect to Goffinette that Matheny and Rooney, or Matheny or Rooney, had done that. So why isn't that a triable issue?
There's two reasons. First of all, it's an inadmissible opinion by Mr. Porter. Mr. Porter wasn't there to see who put the noose above the H line.
I don't see that as significant. If he says to Goffinette that, or he hints to Goffinette that Matheny and Rooney were responsible, doesn't that put some burden on Goffinette to investigate?
Which he did. That's his second answer, Your Honor. In fact, Mr. Goffinette testified that he talked to all the production workers all together in a meeting in the break room.
Should he have talked to Matheny and Rooney separately as they were the suspects?
He talked to 10 of them, including Mr. Matheny, in individual sessions at their workstations.
He didn't single them out as suspects.
I'm sorry?
He didn't single out Matheny and Rooney as suspects to be interrogated more individually.
He did, in fact, interrogate Mr. Matheny individually at his workstation that same evening of the meeting with all the production workers. You compare this to Williams versus Waste Management of Illinois, and while the plaintiff in their brief contends that the efforts to investigate and remedy were insufficient in this case, they're better than they were in the Williams case. Not only did they have a meeting sooner in the Erie case, but they had a meeting of all production employees. They told them at that meeting, "This is intolerable conduct in this workplace." They asked them individually, or at the meeting, they asked everybody who was responsible, and did individually later. There's five times that Pat Santos asked the plaintiff who was responsible, and he didn't ever say. He only said, "I think it was meant for me." So in point of fact, the duty that Mr. Porter had in this case to inform the employer of this misconduct in the workplace was breached. The other duty that he had in this case was to stay on at work until the point in time that the employer had knowledge of these claimed acts of misconduct and had an opportunity to remedy and redress them. He didn't do either of those.
Well, when was that going to happen?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
When was that going to happen?
That would have happened at any point in time that Tremaine Porter talked to management about these claimed misconduct acts. He had like five or six with co-workers that he didn't inform them about. He had the time that he saw the noose above the H line. He didn't report that to Ms. Santos or anybody else in management. He claims that when Ms. Santos put the noose on her bulletin board, that was another horrible act. He didn't tell anybody at Erie about that. The only purpose for her putting that noose on the bulletin board was to keep it out of the clutter of her papers from being lost, or the cleaning people discarding it, and to make sure she was going to tell the other shift supervisors about this misconduct in the workplace.
I find that a very odd way to deal with a noose. It seems to me it's the kind of thing that you would put in a drawer, not hang up for people to continue seeing. I found that very odd.
Well, Your Honor,
it's a noose. I mean, can you? A noose is the most potent sign that you have a racial harassment problem, isn't it?
In this case, there were actually three nooses, two by Mr. Alvarez that the plaintiff, Mr. Porter, enjoyed and participated in.
Well, he maintains that he most certainly didn't enjoy and participate.
Well,
he claims he was scared and feared for his safety. You've presented disputed facts in the summary judgment brief. We have to take the facts in the light most favorable to Mr. Porter, and he vehemently denies that he enjoyed the noose.
In his brief, he did. In actuality, when you read the evidence from the transcript, he was laughing and giggling on the first Alvarez noose in the break room when they were referring to him as the minute man who was always a minute or two late for work, and the idea being that the noose, he was putting it on his own neck for being so frequently tardy. The second one was in the locker room, both of these behind closed doors. And in that instance, Your Honor, the plaintiff, Mr. Porter, asked Alvarez if he could have that noose so he could take it home, tie up his wife, and use it for sexual pleasure. Does that conduct sound like somebody that was fearful of the noose?
He maintains that he never said anything of the sort.
He does not. He did not deny that in the evidence. He didn't even address those two nooses in the evidence. Mr. Alvarez told that story in detail about those two nooses. Mr. Porter never stated a word to contradict Alvarez's statements. So there is no evidence of any dispute of facts on those issues.
Well, then I have misread something.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. In this case, on the issues of discrimination or hostile work environment or constructive discharge, the case totally fails because there's a lack of evidence of any adverse employment decision, and the evidence proves that Mr. Alvarez, who was not in the protected class, was in fact terminated when finally Erie was told about the conduct that he and the plaintiff engaged in the workplace. They learned that after plaintiff voluntarily left his employment without cause, when Burton faxed to them the plaintiff's statement, which is Defendant's Exhibit 3, outlining and stating all these claimed occurrences that were, in his opinion, misconduct, which he never informed Erie management of. We think the fact that they claimed that our handbook wasn't available, he had his own employee handbook with Burton, which described in detail that if there's any kind of harassment or hostile conduct in the workplace, he has to immediately report that to Burton. In this case, the claim that there's a retaliatory discharge is also without evidence of proof, in that he did not take any protective action. He did not report to Erie Management any misconduct in the workplace, and he obviously then had no adverse employment action which was caused by this alleged protected activity.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Feeway.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Carr, does she have time? Any time? 1 minute? Yeah.
Your Honor, just a couple of brief points into what my colleague said. First of all, Mr. Goffinay never interviewed Mr. Matheny.
I can't hear you.
I apologize. Mr. Goffinay never interviewed Mr. Matheny. Both Goffinay and Matheny admit that in their depositions. That is undisputed. So that's, with all due respect, counsel simply incorrect in that regard. Porter did give Erie a chance to remedy this situation. 11 days passed from the time he first complained and Ms. Santos first found that noose hanging. And after this one meeting, this one 15-minute meeting happens. And
what was the nature of his complaint?
This noose was meant for me. He said this.
That's what he told Santos?
Sir. Yes, that's what he told Santos. And all that happened after that one meeting.
Did he complain about the other two nooses?
He did not, sir. No. And it's no wonder why, because after that first meeting, all of these things happened. He felt, and he testified to this, he felt, look, I couldn't trust these people. I was terrified. These guys were threatening me. He didn't feel like he could complain. And the case law is very clear under Title VII. If you have escalation after a complaint, that gives rise to a question of fact as to whether or not the employer's anti-harassment procedures are, in fact, effective.
Well, Mr. Feeweger said that Porter didn't testify that he was bothered by the other two nooses.
Judge, he did. And we provided the deposition testimony. He blatantly said, I never asked anybody to give me a noose to tie up my wife for sexual pleasures. There's no jury in the world that's going to believe that. And Mr. Porter certainly did not testify to that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank Mr. Feeweger also, and we will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.